This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Fitness mom Missy Beavers bludgeoned dead in the local church basement just before a fitness class. Good evening. I'm Nancy Grace. This is Crime Stories. I want to thank you for being with us. Exercise mom Missy Beavers stabbed dead.
Who is this person? How did they arrive? And how did they get away without even being seen?
The time of the day, even the weather outside suggests this was a targeted murder.
So this is our little shrine in honor of my mom. And we just have a couple of family photos laid out. This is probably our one and only family photo that we have. And we're all pretty young in it.
A couple weeks ago, both of y'all were busy, so I had nobody to hang out with. I went to Target and I saw one of my friends and her mom. Mm-hmm. And it was like such a nice day outside. It was like a Saturday. And I like got in the car and I started crying. Because mm-hmm. I was like, oh my God, like, I forgot that like people do that. Like people yeah. like hang out with their moms and like go shopping and stuff like that.
That is heartbreaking. That's Missy Beavers' daughter missing her mom. She states she saw another mom and daughter she knew, and they went in the car and cried because it hit her. That's what other people do. That from our friends at CBS. The case of Missy Beavers, unsolved. Straight out to special guest, longtime colleague and friend, Alan Duke, investigative journalist, editor-in-chief, leadstories.com. Alan, thank you for being with us. Who would have thought that this much later, you and I would still be trying to solve the Missy Beavers case?
It's heartbreaking. You know, back 9, 10 years ago, I was talking with Brandon Beavers, and he was thinking it wouldn't take that long. You know, after 2 or 3 months, it started to get frustrating. And to go on for a decade for these children to have grown up, I think the youngest was in the second grade when this happened. And I suppose she's probably about to graduate or has graduated from high school by now. They're talking about getting married and all of this without their mother. It's still a mystery. Who was that person in that makeshift police SWAT gear walking with a hammer and a pick down the hallway of their church and then killing Missy Beavers? It's unbelievable that all of the scientific, the forensic analysis that you can do has not developed a solution to this. We've had other cases like this, but this one is the one that really sticks in my heart.
The suspect arrived at the church first and forced entry into the location. Missy arrived a few minutes later. First time surveillance captured the suspect on video was about 10 minutes before 4 a.m. Miss Beavers arrived at about 4:16 in the parking lot and entered the church immediately. A few minutes later, she was inside the church, not realizing the intruder was already inside, and shortly thereafter, she was murdered inside of the church. We're not going to discuss the details of how Miss Beavers was murdered. Our communication center received some calls to 911 at about 5 a.m. reporting the incident to Midlothian Police Department. Just want to reiterate that our top priority is finding Mrs. Killer.
Straight back out to Alan Duke joining us, editor-in-chief, leadstories.com. Alan, let's start at the beginning. Missy Beavers, ultimate mom, gladiator mom, remember that? She led the gladiator-style aerobics workout there at the Midlothian Church, which, coming from a spot in the middle of nowhere, rural Bibb County, we had to drive 25 minutes to get to McDonald's. In the middle of nowhere, Midlothian, Texas, zero crime rate. She's at the church, the Midlothian Church, 4 o'clock in the morning to prepare for one of those excruciating mom workouts that they have before they wake the children up and before they go to work. Oh, agony. But she loved it, and so did all of her students. So she is there at a church in the middle of nowhere, 4 a.m. It's dark outside. Okay, I set the scene. Pick it up.
Well, there's actually some video that tells us what happened before her murder, including outside of the church. There was the video that you and I examined so closely 9 or so years ago of the Altima that was driving through the gun store parking lot just up Highway 287, pulled in, did some mysterious parking and turning around, wondering what were they doing. Notice it's raining in the middle of this. And eventually, the theory is that this car, this Altima, because of the timing of it and the remoteness of all of this, was probably related to this murder. But where did the car park? I've looked at the aerial video, the aerials of this area. It's surrounded by woods. Unless you pull into the parking lot and walk into the church, you're going to have to walk in through woods, that kind of thing. It is raining. It was really messy, and it was early in the morning, but this is remote. Inside the church, speaking of looking at video, just today, I started looking for the first time in several years at the interior video, and I noticed some things, Nancy. I don't remember noticing. If you watch him walking, or he or her walking down the hall, that hammer is in the left hand there, opening those Dutch doors and then continuing down. And then what's odd about this video is in a couple of seconds, the video freezes, it stops, and you see him, the person again walking back. But one of the odd things is at the 42-second mark, as the killer approaches a door in the hallway, for the first time today, I notice another tool, which could have been the murder weapon, a pick. It's not the hammer that I was thinking was used to kill Missy Beavers. There is a pick that is in the right hand while the hammer is in the left hand, while the killer, right here, while the killer is trying to pry open that door.
Okay. To Joseph Scott Morgan joining us, and everybody on the panel, please jump in. Joe Scott, professor of forensics, Jacksonville State University. He is the author of Blood Beneath My Feet on Amazon, and he is the star of a hit podcast, Body Bags with Joseph Scott Morgan. But for our purposes, he is a death investigator who I first met when he was at the Fulton County Medical Examiner's Office many years ago when I was prosecuting, and he has over 10,000 death scenes under his belt. You know, what's interesting, well, everything that Alan Duke says is interesting. But the fact that every time you re-examine a case, you find something new. I've always found that to be true. It can be a tiny tidbit, but something new, or you see it in a different way. Did you hear what he just said about a pick?
Yep. Yep. And it actually fits in, Nancy, with cause of death that they've listed for Missy all these years. Actually, multiple puncture wounds, Nancy. And Alan's mentioning a pick. Well, that would fit in. That would fit in with the pathology findings. Missy sustained multiple puncture wounds to the head and also to the chest, Nancy. So that gives you an indication, I think, from a death investigative perspective and the dynamics of what happened to her, where she was positioned, how she was positioned, and also how the perpetrator was positioned relative to her when this individual savagely murdered her, Nancy.
Dr. Geralyn Utter is with us, clinical psychologist specializing in psychological evaluations and risk assessments for individuals in the justice system, author of Mainlining Philly, Survival Hope, Resisting Drug Addiction, and Aftershock, How Past Events Shake Up Your Life Today, and more. She is producer and star of Utter Nonsense, a documentary. Dr. Geralyn, thank you for being with us. I find it very interesting, and I'm sure it means something. It's probative. It proves something. The cause of death, the manner of death. She was attacked multiple times. Now, hold on, let me give you some more facts. Alan Duke, isn't it true that at first people suggested this was a burglary of a church gone wrong? What were they going to steal? The video equipment, please? That never works in any local church ever. But why kill her so many times over with a blunt object the way they did?
Yeah, I mean, the only thing that this burglar took was Missy Beaver's life. There's nothing reported stolen from the church. And as you watch the video, it doesn't look like a typical burglary. It looks like a search, just looking around, familiarizing yourself with the scene. And this burglar came prepared with murder weapons. If you notice, that pick I was mentioning ends up in a tool belt on the killer's hip, the right hip.
Let's start that video again. As you're speaking, Alan, repeat what you just said. I find it very significant.
Right. So this burglar, if that's what it was, the only thing the burglar stole was Missy Beaver's life. As you watch this person going up and down the hall, I only recently noticed that there was a pick. It was hanging from apparently the belt, and approaching this door, trying to pry it open, you will see the hammer being used to try to pry it open while there is a pick. It's at the 42-second mark on the YouTube video. You will find that there is a pick in the right hand, which I didn't notice before. And it kind of shocked me this week when I was looking at this video and said, why did I even think about that? Or I assume the police did. Let's assume that.
So it's a right-handed perp, but I don't know why, Alan Duke, you even suggest this is a burglary. The perp, and I'm not saying the guy, because I have serious questions as to whether it is a guy, but the perp lay in wait. If they wanted something, go get it and leave. And you know, Alan, as you and I have discussed many, many times, all the way back to our HLN days, with burglaries gone wrong, in other words, the burglar comes in and somebody comes home, or they find someone in there, they leave. The statistics are overwhelming. A burglar comes in to typically steal. And when they're confronted with a person, they hightail it. Like in Guthrie, for Pete's sake, that was not a burglary gone wrong. The burglar didn't come in and go, oh my stars, Miss Guthrie's home. Let's take an 84-year-old woman with us. It's just ridiculous. Same thing here. This is not a burglary. It's a killing.
I had two burglars come into my home a year ago. And in our garage, my wife and I went down, confronted them. These were two young men, about 30 years old. They could have beaten the heck out of me and my wife, but they didn't. They fled. I got some great video of it, too. They were afraid. They did not want to be caught.
Of course you did. Did you give yourself the very first interview?
Yes, I did.
Alan, that just bears out what I'm saying. This was planned. Who's driving around in a parking lot in the pouring rain at 4 a.m. and that you know it's the same person? The population there is what, 3,000 or 4,000?
They could have known Missy was going to be there because guess what? The Gladiators class was posted where? On Facebook.
Okay, Dr. Geralyn Utter joining us. I was coming to you earlier, Dr. Utter, because the number of blows, which included her torso all over her, that is killing her multiple times over. If it had been a burglary, overwhelmingly, the burglar would leave. They're not there to kill somebody. They're there to get something. And what are you really going to get at a church? They clean out the offering plate immediately after the offering's taken. There's nothing of value there. What do they want? The VHS equipment? No. And plus, the killer was lying in wait, waiting for Missy Beavers. They could have taken whatever they wanted and left, but they didn't.
Yeah, so Nancy, I watched the videos, I read the articles, and one of the first things that I noticed was how rural the actual area is, to your point. So no one is going to this area without a plan. So to me, it feels very planned and very calculated. Also, the fact that the message was on Facebook promoting the class that Ms. Beavers taught. So anybody that's going to this area is going there with intention. If it was a burglary, to your point, they would take what they want to get and leave. If they were to run into her, if it was what we would call a traditional burglary, they would probably get scared, run away, or if they had a weapon or they would try to maybe, push the person or maim them to an extent so they can leave and get out of there. What you're looking at as far as her manner of death is what we call overkill.
So she wasn't just maimed in order for them to burglarize something and leave. It was very personal. It felt like a very personal attack about her head and about her chest. So the person that did this from a psychological perspective is somebody that felt they had a connection to her, maybe had a connection to her, and that she was very much targeted because it was overkill. They wanted to create pain. They wanted to hurt her. They wanted to hurt, you know, potentially folks that knew her, were in her world. So absolutely right. Not a burglary, definitely something that we would consider overkill due to a personal connection that this person may have felt to Ms. Beavers.
I got my phone rang at about 5 a.m.
Yeah.
And it was one of the campers who me and Missy have known for a long time. And he said, "Brandon, you've got to come down here." He said, "There's been an accident." And I said, "What do you mean?" I said, I'm not at home."
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you know, you need to come here. There's Missy's. You know, I got another phone call from the scene from a female Midlothian officer.
Mm-hmm.
And she said that Missy's no longer with us. And I didn't know.
Did it register that she meant like Missy had died or was killed?
We went in there, my dad and I both. My dad went there kind of in a support role. Mm-hmm. And we met in one room, and they started asking some questions, you know, that were pointed, you know, hey, you know, where have you been? You know, all, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. And then they left the room. I said, if there's anything that I can contribute to this, to find out what happened, who's responsible, I said, I'm not going to run from it.
That is Missy Beavers' husband, Brandon Beaver, speaking to Scott Brooks, the president at the Waxahachie Sun. Alan Duke, let's talk about the husband, which is typically the first place you start a murder investigation when a married woman is found dead.
Well, the position he was in, he still had to raise his three children. He had to go on or try to recreate this normal life without his wife. And added to that is the suspicion. You know, we were calling him, everybody in the world was calling him. His neighbors were suspicious, looking at him side-eyed perhaps. And he was getting letters from people he didn't know accusing him of something. Yet I've talked to him several times and I can tell you, I did not get any indication that he was anything but sincere. And the police investigators obviously didn't have any timeline or any DNA or any other evidence to connect him. Now, I don't think they've ruled anybody out as a suspect. They say that, but I don't see any reason to believe that Brandon was a suspect. I think just the size of the person in the video doesn't exactly match him. So, and the timing.
No, it doesn't match him at all. Let's take a look at it. Alan Duke, he's a tall guy, and I have watched him walk, and he does not walk like this. Look at how the perp is walking. That is not at all, even remotely similar to the way that Brandon Beavers walks. And I've got to tell you, I put Brandon Beavers under the microscope, and I kept him there for months and months until I compared the gait. The gait of the perp never breaks. It's this gait, and that is not how Brandon Beavers walks. Simply put.
Yeah, and this killer is between 5'2 and 5'7. If it's a man, it's a short man. If it's a woman, about average, perhaps. But we don't even know that. But Brandon doesn't even know that. I think he suspects, the last I've heard, he suspects it was actually a woman who killed his wife.
I've suspected it too, and I'll tell you why. At a certain point, the perp throws out a hip, and it's just a feminine gesture. And I know I'm stereotyping, but I know what I know, and that's my observation. Joe Scott Morgan, let's talk about the scene. Let's talk about the crime scene and what, if anything, we can glean. And is there a possibility, as in Nancy Guthrie's case, that the initial scene was botched? Ooh, I hate to even say that.
Yeah, I suppose that anything's possible here at this point in time. I, looking back on this case, Nancy, I first started covering this with you at HLN all those years ago. And, you know, we had several thoughts about this. We've got broken glass at the scene, which this individual was walking about. If I remember correctly, I might be misremembering. They actually knocked out a couple of windows with this instrument that was left behind. I hope that they collected all of that.
Please, please, hold on. Put Joe Scott up. You know, that was just a staging. Let's make it look like a break-in. BS, it was not. That didn't happen. I mean, I agree with you. There was glass, but I think it was staged.
Yeah, that's not my point. Forensically, what I'm thinking about is if these items were touched anyway, if that instrument they were using transferred anything onto the surfaces that it was making contact with, if this person had potentially handled that instrument ungloved in some way, some kind of trace element may have been transferred over. You know, when you see them, they're completely clad in this garb that they have. You know, one of the things that we think about are trace elements, hair, skin cells, all these sorts of things that have fallen off, they've made contact with, right, Nancy? And also, I'm thinking about these injuries that Missy sustained. Going back to my earlier comment about puncture wounds, if this instrument, obviously, if that is the instrument making contact with her body, did it leave anything behind? It goes back to Locard's principle, right? Every contact leaves a trace. Does it go back to anything specifically matching that weapon? I'm thinking tool marks. I'm also thinking trace evidence here. And how much do they still have retained? How stable is this evidence that they have? Because there's going to be a lot of people that are going to be picking over this evidence. Who do they allow to have this? I'm hoping, and you know, maybe it's a little boy in me, I hope the Texas Rangers are on this case. Because, and I would really hope that the Texas Department of Public Safety will form up maybe a brand new group of cold case investigators. To Alan's point earlier and to what you said to him, it's always better to get a new generation of people that can put their eyes on things because they very well might see something, Nancy, they haven't seen before that the old investigators have not seen. I don't even know how many of these people are still around. And you can't tell me that the little Midlothian, Texas Police Department is running down all the leads. This is a broad spectrum event that took place. This is a targeted event. This is somebody that knew her, I think. This is somebody that wanted to brutalize her because, Nancy, with an instrument like this, it would essentially take one blow. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about penetrative, crushing injuries here that was pure and total violence.
We released some additional surveillance footage from inside the church just a few minutes ago, and that can be found on our social media sites. We really do believe that somebody still knows that this person is out there. Somebody knows who this person is, and they haven't yet come forward. We're convinced of that, and we ask the public to analyze the footage once again, watch the mannerisms, walking style of the suspect. If they have any information, please contact us.
Alan Duke, that is Kevin Johnson, Assistant Chief Midlothian PD. Alan, he's right. Somebody does know. Let's talk about the marriage problems. And again, I'm convinced that the person walking around that church is not the husband. What can you tell me about financial problems and, more important, sex affairs?
Well, like many couples, they have financial problems. Emails, text messages showed that. But I think most interesting, not long before this happened, just a matter of weeks, Missy had taken a trip, I think it was to San Diego on a fitness trip, and had been with some people there. There's some speculation about that. One of the most mysterious things were LinkedIn messages from this this man who had been exchanging flirtatious LinkedIn messages with Missy. My understanding is that he might have been ruled out, but still in my mind, that is suspicious. Maybe not him, but maybe somebody connected to that person was upset about what was going on.
Okay, why are you dancing around the subject? Were they having sex affairs? Simple, yes, no.
The messages are called flirtatious. I think that's the best. We don't know. I don't know if they were. You can only suppose it, what was going on. you know, that does happen in marriages sometimes, and it does lead to murders sometimes. But of course, most times, no, I would hope.
Dave Mack joining us, Crime Stories investigative reporter. I recall distinctly at the time sex affairs were alleged. And Dave, Ellen Duke, I don't care. I don't care who's sleeping with who. Cats and dogs sleeping together, don't care. I'm not the church lady. I'm trying to get information regarding a potential motive so I can get to the killer. I don't care who's doing what with who. Doesn't matter. Dave Mack, were they having sex affairs?
According to a search warrant released by law enforcement, Missy Beavers was allegedly having an affair.
What about him, Brandon Beavers?
They say affair is plural, meaning law enforcement, but I'm not seeing anything on Brandon specifically having an affair. The couple had serious financial struggles that also came out during the investigation. They had text messages back and forth between Brandon and Missy about their financial issues. The other external to the marriage intimate relationships seem to be on Missy's side of things.
Okay, not judging. Don't care. I'm trying to get to a potential motive. Because to me, Alan Duke, let's see that video again. This is the best thing we've got in the case. Never have gotten any substantial DNA. Nothing. Keep on the video. You've got a slew-footed killer. Toes point out. They're short. Around 5'2 to 5'7. The way they walk, I'm just telling you, I think it's a woman. I've always thought it was a woman. What is the motive? It's not a sex attack. It's not a theft. It's not a burglary. So what would the motive be? Anger, hate, revenge, Alan Duke, over an alleged affair between Missy Beavers and a woman's husband?
It's what's been in my mind for all these years, is that that is the most obvious thing, because it happens. And it's a mystery to me as to why the Midlothian police haven't been able to get to the bottom of that. Keep in mind, about every 2 years, they changed investigators, which may be good, may be bad. But the one that took over in 2018, Sergeant Vaughn, Andy Vaughn, is no longer even a detective there. He's in charge of support services for the department, which is an administrative thing. If you look at his resume and some of the other resumes, what was their qualifications really to dig into this? I hate to say this, but this was a small town department. Joe can certainly speak to this. My question is, I've always wondered also, what did they do at the scene that might have compromised the scene? It was raining. Where were the footprints? Why couldn't they get something? Now, the advances in a decade in DNA testing, I mean, I'll send in my DNA if it helps the case. Everybody seems to have sent their DNA in, and they're not able to track anything. What are they doing? Why, after 10 years, hasn't the forensic science advanced to the point that we can solve this?
And I also wonder how often they're sending what they do have in for repeat testing. Okay, back to what you're saying to Dr. Geralyn Utter joining us, a clinical psychologist specializing in forensic cases. Dr. Geralyn, the mode of death, repeat stabbings, potentially with a pickaxe or a pick to the head, very often in revenge or anger killing, specifically when women are the victim, their beauty is destroyed. Their face is desecrated. Think about Keely Gonsalves and Maddie Mogan. Brian Koberger killed them, stabbed them, including in their faces. That's horrific to even imagine. Some of their teeth were actually dislodged. He was desecrating their beauty because of his repressed sex problems, according to some experts. Does this seem like an angry wife hell-bent on revenge?
This definitely seems like someone that wants to inflict pain and, to your point, desecrate her. Because again, I'll make the statement, we reference it as overkill. It wasn't like they were just trying to kill her and move on. They wanted to inflict pain And then even if she died quickly, and Joe Morgan's the one that can answer that, they wanted to mangle her, you know, her face, her chest. That's what you want to pay attention to, because maybe they are trying to desecrate her beauty and you know, make it so there's a closed casket and really, really hurt her and maim her. But another thing that I was thinking, and again, Nancy, this is just a thought, we're surmising or hypothesizing that this could be a female, but this female could also be the one that she may have had a relationship with. We don't know. We're making the assumption that this could be an angry wife, but also let's just be open-minded.
Okay, I've got it on good authority that that her affair was with a male. But you're right to pursue every possible avenue. You have to. And if you don't, you'll hear about it at trial. Hey, did you focus on my client first? Did you get tunnel vision? Did you ever look at this? Did you ever look at that? So they have to investigate exactly what you just said. To you, Joe Scott Morgan, following up on what Dr. Geraldine Utter just said, the manner of death. Wow, that many blows to her head, her torso, including her breasts. What is that telling you? You've seen this before.
It's overkill, Nancy, particularly with a sharp instrument, okay? So remember what I said earlier about we can get an idea of the physical relationship, and I'm talking about it at the crime scene, all right, just to qualify that, relative to the perpetrator and Missy. I think that she would have had to have been on her back, because they're talking about her sustaining these wounds to the chest. This goes to this idea that maybe, you know, they're saying head, that could mean face. Can I say one other thing too, Nancy? When I look at this individual kind of ambulate around, first off, they pronate, which means they turn in their feet. They're walking on the balls of their feet. If you look at the right leg, it looks as though there could potentially be some kind of existent injury, because even though they both feet pronate, the one on the right looks like they favor that leg as well. Another bit here, this person's a real slob, whoever they are. They're dressed also in riot gear, because this is what this is when you see them. They're carrying around a lot of weight. This is very bulky. They've got a vest on, it looks like. They've got a helmet on. They had to have snuck up on Missy. Missy, you know, you showed that image just a second ago of Missy climbing that rope. She is in top shape, okay? This person is not going to go face-to-face with her, because they're moving. They almost look like the Michelin Man, okay? And they're having to attack her. This is a very dynamic environment. Nancy, this person is easily, I think, identifiable just visually. You begin to do gait analysis. If she or he has got a bad leg, you can't change that. And you can't change the way you walk. This is something we have understood in forensics for a long, long time. So I think that the field can be narrowed here significantly. I'm wondering if the FBI has gotten involved with this and they've done an actual gait analysis on her or him, because that's the reality of what they can do at this point. You couple that with, as Alan mentioned earlier, with modern forensics, modern in our context relative to DNA evidence, how sensitive everything is now. I just hope that they have enough sample of whatever it is they had in the beginning that they can still run it through the testing.
Imagine this video with the helmet off, and let's just pretend a long ponytail hanging down the back. Keep watching as the person walks. Keep watching. I mean, Alan Duke, I can totally visualize this being a woman right there.
There's another thing that did not exist 10 years ago that they can use, and that's AI. You see all these fake AI videos. There probably are AI tools now, or will be in another week or two, the way it's going, that they can take this video and they can sharpen it. They can change it. They can generate more detail in it. And we're going to see more. Have they done that? Have they thought about doing that? I think that they should, because we're 10 years down the road and things are so much more is possible with analyzing video, and I want to see them do that.
The population there was just 22,000 people at the time Missy was murdered.
Midlothian, Texas is having some severe weather. not severe enough to prevent mother of three, Missy Beaver's early morning fitness class, as she posts on Facebook, "If it's raining, we're still training. No excuses. You are gladiators." Missy informs students, because of the rain, they will be training inside the church rather than the parking lot. Beavers arrives at the church before the sun comes up to get things prepared for her gladiators.
Missy Beavers arrives at Creekside Church at 4:16 a.m. and begins setting up for her 5 a.m. fitness class. She doesn't realize there is someone else in the building. Video surveillance inside Creekside Church shows a person dressed in full police SWAT tactical gear walking through the halls of the church with an unusual gait while clutching a hammer. The unknown person uses force to get into the church when he is first seen on video about 3:50 a.m.
Ellen Duke, she put it out there. Even if it rains, we're going to train. Anyone interested at all in Missy Beavers could find that.
Yes, it was obvious. If you were so motivated, and apparently this person was so motivated, I agree with you. They weren't burglarizing. They weren't trying to take anything but her life. And it was there. She put it out on Facebook. I'm going to be there. I'm going to be alone. And that's your opportunity.
And the person went in ahead of time and was lying in wait, correct, Alan?
They knew the routine. They knew that she would be there probably at a certain time. They arrived just before 4 o'clock in the morning. It was about 16 or 17 minutes later that Missy walks in and is attacked. And by the way, we don't see the video that they've got. The police do have other video of her entering, of the suspect entering, and of other things happening. But we don't see them. We have only seen 2 minutes of four blurry security cameras.
I wonder why they're still hanging on to it, Alan.
I don't think that they're even releasing the police reports still, saying it's an active investigation. Maybe Dave Mack or Joe Scott know different. But I know we were requesting it, and they were saying, no, we can't let you have the initial police report. The officer responding to the scene would have filled that out. How did they handle the crime scene? What did they see? I've never seen it, and I don't think it's ever been released.
What was the point of entry, Alan?
It was apparently a forced entry and breaking glass forced entry. I don't know which door it was in, but it was supposedly, according to the chief years ago, it was a forced entry.
To Dave Matt, what can you tell me about unusual LinkedIn messages Missy got within about 3 days before her murder?
There was a message that arrived less than 3 days before the murder, and it shocked Missy enough that she shared it with a very close friend, showed her the message, because it was weird and creepy and from a man, or allegedly a man, and Missy didn't know who the person was, but it bothered her enough to show it to the friend. The friend also told police she didn't know who this individual was. So you've got an anonymous or an unknown person sending a creepy message to Missy Beavers in 72 hours before she's murdered.
Do you have any idea what was in the message, Dave Mack?
No, they have not. It has been called creepy and strange. That is all we've been told about it.
You know, Alan Duke, I would not put it past the killer to have staged that, to make it look as if she had a male stalker to throw interest elsewhere.
Social media messaging and misinformation is the area I've worked in for the last 10 years, as you know, at Lead Stories. And I can tell you, it's very easy to deceive somebody with a post on LinkedIn or Facebook or anywhere because they don't really know who you are. You could be in a different country. You could be somebody completely different. And it would be a good way of setting something up if someone had the forethought and the motivation to do that.
I have no doubt this was planned far in advance.
Missy Beaver's death investigation now includes a vehicle of interest that police say is captured on surveillance cameras at a nearby business just before the murder. It's a 2010 to 2012 Nissan Altima silver or light color with an oval sticker on its bumper. Police also rule out Missy Beaver's husband, Brandon, as he is on an annual fishing trip at the time of the murder. But Brandon's father, Missy Beaver's father-in-law, Randy, might have some explaining to do. A police search warrant says 4 days after the murder, Randy Beavers took bloody shirts to the dry clean supercenter of Midlothian.
Alan Duke, that was a dead end. Explain.
Yeah, it was an animal's blood. I think a dog blood. There were no signs of human blood on that laundry. So that was a dead end. It did raise suspicion about the father-in-law, but didn't go anywhere.
The point of entry was on the side door on the north southwest side. A pry bar was used to smash a glass pane. And all this went down about 30 minutes before Missy arrived. I'm convinced, Alan Duke, that the perp knew, of course, Missy would be there, knew what time she would be there, and knew that the husband was out of town on an annual fishing trip. In a community that small, you know when your neighbor is going on a fishing trip.
Yeah, and probably knew what door not to smash so that it wouldn't raise her suspicion as she entered there. Now that I think of it, she probably went through a regular door that she would regularly go through, and this person apparently knew that and smashed the window in the other door.
And the suspect enters at 3:50 a.m. Missy walks in at 4:18 a.m., 18 minutes later. Quite the coincidence, Alan. You and I both agree there is no coincidence in criminal law.
I agree. There's no question in my mind this was not a burglary. This was a planned killing. If it's a burglar, why would a burglar invest in this fake SWAT gear police getup and put it on and go in? Why would they do that just for a burglary? No burglar. Burglars, by the way, are about the stupidest people I know. I met a few of them, put some in jail, and this was not a burglar.
Alan Duke joining us, editor-in-chief, leadstories.com. Where does the investigation stand now?
Well, they've switched investigators off and on. They say they're working with the state police. The FBI has a role in it. But as Joe Scott mentioned earlier, let's hope that they're resubmitting the DNA evidence, if there is any, for reanalysis with the new forensics. On many cold cases, it's just a matter, I guess, of waiting for technology to give you a clue, to help you. You know, you've done many, many of these shows where killers were caught because of DNA advancements or other technology. And I think really AI video technology could play a role in this. So we just got to sit on our hands while police do something, and let's hope they're doing it.
Alan, did you ever believe that we would be trying to solve Missy Beaver's murder 10 years later?
No. No, I thought that the attention to it that you gave to it, that others and other news agencies gave to it, would put pressure on the police to open up. And it's amazing now how many crimes are solved because detectives do that. They let information out there so we can crowdsource it. I know some people turn their nose up at doing that, some law enforcement, but that's, I think, is what's needed. If you go online, search Missy Beavers, you'll see a lot of people on Reddit and elsewhere are talking about it. Let's do more and let's solve this. You know, some of the big murders over time have been solved because somebody actually said, hey, I'm free, I'm going to write a book about it. And I doubt that we'll see a book written about this, but maybe there's going to be a confession somewhere along the line. Somebody on their deathbed will make a confession. I don't know, but
I hope we don't have to wait for someone else to die before the case is solved. Guys, you're seeing Missy Beavers, a beautiful young mom, a wife, fitness enthusiast, her whole life before her, murdered brutally in the local church. If you know or think you know anything about her murder, please dial Midlothian PD 972-775-7624 or Ellis County Sheriff's 972-937-7297. We remember American hero Deputy Sheriff, Deputy Marshal Thomas Weeks, U.S. Department of Justice, shot in the line of duty after 21 years. Leaving behind wife turned widow Kelly and four children, Abby, Mackenzie, Brady, and Patrick. American hero, Deputy Marshal Thomas Weeks. Thanks to our guests, but especially to you for being with us. Nancy Grace signing off for tonight, but I'll see you tomorrow night. And until then, good night, friend.
This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.